Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Discuss Tariq along with Jent.
Hi guys.
So this week, Jent.
Very, very, very special.
Alright, so as usual on Economist, we generally talk about economics, finance, money, and how they interact with people, and those are typically our themes. And we are not deviating from theme this week because giving a talk a while ago, well, he wasn't here, he joined by Skype, I guess, Jent.
Yes.
So Jent was there at the event, the Council of Financial Planners annual meet, where Morgan Housel, who's the collaborative fund, which is a private equity fund, psychology and behavior, that's sort of his area, world-renowned expert on that.
Yeah.
And Jent, I suppose...
Me and my entire team was taking notes. So basically, we have charted down a few of the basic points, what was discussed in the session, and we got a lot of feedback from our community. They wanted to know what the talk was all about. Since we couldn't share the video or the recordings due to copyright issues, so we thought we will collect all the notes and then record. We have recorded feedback from various persons, so we just want to play. So the session covers various Morgan's examples about various 2-3 investor behaviors. It has 2-3 Nobel economic winners stories. Then what investors psychology as an investor you can learn from other industries to take a cue from it to your investing process.
All right, and talk about any of them before we get into the actual notes and the discussions about those, any particular insight that stood out for you?
One particular thing which major takeaway from me was Morgan's ability to churn such beautiful blog posts day after day, and he's been doing this for the past 13 years with 3,000 plus articles, which is equivalent to 40 books, I suppose. And there's no diminishing marginal utility in his writing. Every single day, new article he writes is something which is great learning to for his followers. And there was a question asked him about how does he write. So he was very particular about how he started writing and how he was not good at it, but over the period of time since he started writing, because of the practice of writing itself has fine-tuned his articles and his writing style. So for me, that stood out, his writings and his way how he puts across his viewpoints, taking inspiration from other industries and adopting into his writing to investing world, is what stood out for me.
To that, let's dive right in.
So hi, welcome everyone. So this is Jayant and team of COFP reporting to you guys. So today we are recording a very interesting topic, what we happened in a retreat 2018 at COFP. Basically what we are doing here is recording the learnings from Morgan Housel's session, because we got a lot of requests from the guys from the industry. The guys who didn't attend the session wanted to know how was the session, but since due to some copyright issues we couldn't record the show, neither we can put out thing. So some of our members have noted down few of the learnings from the session and we'll be taking through this. So here are my co-recordees in the thing. So we have Naveen, aka Uncle. He's a CFP and professor at Christ University. Uncle, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Then we have Ms. Bharti. Bharti is CFP again, principal officer at Apna Insurance Broking Consulting. Welcome up. Then we have Jayesh Bhai, director at Manifest Investment. Jayesh Bhai, welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Thank you.
Then we have Gokul. Till now, most eligible bachelor, now he's been taken. Sorry, ladies. So he's basically head client relationships at Sri Sidwan Investment. Welcome, Gokul.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
Then we have Mr. Silent, Mr. Ravi, CFP again, director at Gaining Ground.
Hi, hi.
Then we have Madam Shalini, executive assistant at COFP. Welcome.
Hello.
And Satish is just silent spectator. He'll not be speaking today.
Hey.
So then, before we begin, we have disclaimer, madam, all yours.
So here is the disclaimer. All opinions expressed by the guests here are solely their opinions. It does not reflect the opinion of COFP or their respected firms. This podcast is for informational purpose only and not be relied on investment decisions. All securities discussed here, participants may not have opinions in them. So let's do this.
Yeah. So Morgan started with an example about how two person can take different routes when it comes to investing. So he gave a example of the first investor. So it was the lady goes by the name of Grace Granell. So Grace was born in 1909, just outside Chicago. So she had to go through a hard life because she was orphaned as a child. She began a career in the bottom of the Great Depression during the 1920s, and then finally found a footing in a career. She worked as a secretary. So what's so special about Grace was she was never married, never had kids, and never learned how to drive. So basically, Grace led a very simple life. Grace died in 2010. She was 100 years old. So what was so superb about her was she left around $7 million of money in her estate, which will be going to charity. So what's so special about the $7 million? So according to Morgan, how did the humble secretary accumulate so much of wealth? So what was the secret about investing? So the secret source of her investing was simple. Grace saved all her life. She put up all her savings in stock market and compounded over 80 years of time, and that was it. There was no some magic formula which she had to get a $7 million.
Morgan again, you know, came with a second example. He was talking about a guy named Richard. Richard had almost the exact opposite background of Grace Granner. He was born into a wealthy family, went to the University of Chicago, got his MBA at Harvard Business School, and he went on to work on Wall Street. He worked his way up to the biggest investment firms. He became the vice chairman of one of the largest investment banks, and without exaggerating, he was one of the most powerful person in global finance. What happened after that? Morgan also mentioned that the day after Grace Granner died, Richard filed for personal bankruptcy. So he told the bankruptcy judge that the financial crisis completely wiped him out. He had no more assets, no more income, and he was fighting to save foreclosure on his house.
So Uncle, what was the learning from these two investors we are getting here?
As Morgan suggested, the most important thing is that there is no industry except finance or investments where this kind of story is even possible. Nowhere else can someone without education, no background, no experience, can vastly outperform someone with the best background, the most beautiful education, and great experience. You cannot imagine that Grace Garner could have performed heart surgery better than a Harvard-educated cardiologist, develop a skyscraper better than the best construction company. You could not even imagine what would have happened if it was besides investing. It shows that in investing, it is not necessarily what you know, but how you behave.
So it's all about behavior when it comes to investing, is what Morgan was trying to say. So Morgan was quoting that investing is not, it's all about behavior, and behavior is not about analytical, and it's not taught that easily in our business schools or as finance courses in colleges, which is supposed to be taught. And it's very counterintuitive when it comes to finance or investment, wherein a lady like a Grace, who has no knowledge whatsoever about investment or finance, just had the patience of investing over a long period of time, compounded her small savings into a large estate when she left behind, simply because she had a good behavior, which was in the market, being in the market. And investing is all about study of human behavior. How does one behave at a particular level? It's what takes you to the next. It's not about what formula you have or how good you are in finance, or do you know how to calculate the formulas which are quoted in the textbooks.
Let's take an example. See, about the nuclear energy, that investing is one of the things which is a learning for us. See, the peaceful use of
nuclear energy. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, that's what Marvin has was stating that. Okay. So nuclear energy for nuclear plants really started in the 60s and 70s. And it's hard to exaggerate how big the deal was. In fact, because nuclear energy promised to solve one of the biggest problems in the human history, that is of generating abundant energy, which was not tied to any country's resources. And it was a big deal. And during that time, that Austria also was pursuing this. And they actually set up a nuclear plant, which was a Zwentendorf nuclear power plant. It was an hour outside Vienna. It took 3 years to build, and it was one of the excellent power plants which was there around that time. And that was actually had a capacity to supply close to 15% of Austria's total power needs, which is massive for one plant basically. But you know what? Austrian parliament just decided, like, you know, okay, let us just give some education about this nuclear energy. See, generally the impression is nuclear energy is bad. So they just wanted to educate the people that, okay, nuclear energy can be used for better things. Okay. So they were wanting to do that, and then they started with these town halls, newspaper editorials and the rest of them. But then, you know, what happened? It backfired, and, like, you know, people were thinking that it is not for them. And the Australian parliament had to do a referendum, and which was like this, like, you know, we have this power plant, do you want to turn it on or not? And the people voted no, and today it is one of the biggest plant unused for what it was prepared for, constructed for, and it is just a training facility now for German engineers.
So nice, Austrian people
really lost it.
Yeah.
So, and what was also fascinating was that at the same time, what is going on in United States and UK, Germany and Sweden, were all building enthusiastically nuclear plants. So the idea was they want to build up and solve the problem. In fact, Japan was enthusiastically also building nuclear plants, whereas the Austrians had the same data, same engineers as everyone else, and they came together and said it's not worth taking the risk. So at the same time, much of the world was also saying it is worth the risk, we should do this. So and what also Morgan felt was that when people think about risk, they don't necessarily do it in an analytical way, they do it in a cultural way. So what you think is risky and how you think about the topic of risk is heavily influenced by the culture you live in, the generation people are born into, values instilled into them vastly across all of us, and also values instilled by parents to everybody. So it's all not same. So it is depending on each people how they are brought up. So risk factors is a natural force that applies to everyone in the same way. That's not how people actually think about risk in their own lives, particularly in investing.
So since we're talking about something which is not in our control and which is outside of our gambit, so someone who's being born is totally not in their control when they can choose to be born. So Morgan was quoting, if in US, if someone is in their 20s teen, and if someone would have born in 1970, they would have seen a great bull market of wherein the market compounded almost nine times, but which is including your real returns and dividends put together. But if someone had born just 2 decades before in 1950s, the stock market real returns would have not been that great. So what he's trying to say here is it's all about in what era you are born also plays a major role on the way how people invest and grow. Like example, in Indian context, if someone was born in 1960s and 70s, he would have seen a good great market in late 80s and beginning of 90s. But if someone would have invested in top of the market in mid 90s, then the returns were not so lucrative. So what he's trying to say here is it's all about certain things which plays, which is outside your control, you don't have, you can't do anything about it. So these kind of things control the behavior of kind of risk which an individual or an investor takes.
Morgan had an interesting slide on inflation. So that was something fascinating, history of inflation. So he quoted that, annual inflation in the United States in, different inflation rates across periods. So for his parents, when they were in the 1970s and 80s, the inflation averaged about 8%. And for Morgan himself, it was about 2%. And for his grandparents, at the time of Great Depression, it was a negative 2% a year.
So since we're talking about inflation, what was it in Germany in 1920?
Yeah, that was one interesting data point he quoted. In Germany in the 1920s, inflation was 1 quadrillion percent. Quadrillion is 1 followed by 15 zeros. That's 15 zeros.
You sure about it?
Yes. So that's plenty of zeros. You get the point.
It went mad in November 1919.
So he also mentioned that gold as an investment in the last decade was extremely with one demographic. It was baby boomers who came of age in 70s and 80s when inflation was really high. So people have completely different views about what is happening in the investment world, not based on better data or models or calculations, but just different life experiences that were outside of their control. That was very interesting, mention from Morgan.
So, Jayesh, what is Morgan quoting about?
Morgan actually highlighted some very interesting things. These are a group of professors from Stanford University actually began and crunched some data, and they wanted to see analytically how this would impact the people who invest. And they came up with some very interesting points to be highlighted. And so the people who grew up during the Great Depression were half likely to invest in stocks compared to the people who grew up in the 60s in the same period of life. And then he went on to say, if people grew up in the 70s, you are a third likely to invest in bonds later in life compared to the people who grew up in the 50s. And if you are in the 80s, that's when the markets prospered, you are most likely to buy stocks on an average higher than any other category of people. So the most important thing, if you see, is that the US markets actually flourished the most in the 80s. The late 80s was a real boom that started when actually Ronald Reagan came back with his second term. And they said that's the breakup of the great bull market that started, and it went on for a decade actually, where people, it ended with the tech crisis. So all these people in these 10 years made a lot of money. And it's found that these experiences were actually cultural experiences that actually brought them to this focus of investing in stocks more primarily than anything.
So basically what he's trying to say here is, if someone would have made great money by investing in stocks, he would come back to invest more money.
Yes, he would come back to put more money back into stocks.
If someone would have lost money in the stock market,
he would have run away. So the decade ran on for, the cycle ran on for a decade. The interesting thing is, the guys would have come at the end of the decade, probably didn't enter for another decade.
Okay.
That's what the cultural studies try to show,
Yeah, and we have this gentleman, Daniel Kahneman.
So for audience and the listeners, Daniel Kahneman is the Nobel Prize winner in 2002 for his work on economic and cognitive psychology. We are happy to still have written brilliant books. Yeah, what was it about?
Yeah, and we talk about his interviews really on individual experiences, how they influence what they think about the world and how they think going forward. And he talked about this. He says, I'm quoting, "The main mistake that people make is not so much in remembering the past, it is in thinking about the past. Whenever something happens," and again quoting him, he says, "we feel that we understand it. We are surprised occasionally, but by and large, the world makes a lot of sense to us. Because when things happen, we find their causes and it's okay. Except that when you compare our ability to explain the past with our ability to forecast the future, the difference is really quite dynamic. Meaning, we explain actually the past with the greatest of ease, we find it really crummy, to forecast the future. Hindsight gives us the illusion that the world is understandable, gives us the illusion that the world makes sense, even when it does not make sense."
So that's a clear explanation of hindsight biases, what we know in behavioral finance now. And Mr. Daniel Kahneman,
it leads to a lot of errors in our investing patterns, in our living patterns, really. And he says that Kahneman himself says that he is himself the most pessimistic person he's ever known. And the reason he says he's a pessimist because he was raised in Nazi-occupied France, and at an early age, he saw how evil people can be. It's not the experience that, say, a Morgenhausel would have had. It's experience that we make our life experience. It's stuck with us, and that is how we deal with risk with other people also for the rest of our lives. It's rather extreme because Kahneman was born in a bad place, a bad time.
Sheer bad luck, I suppose. So what Daniel Kahneman was trying to say here is how people in hindsight understands everything, what has gone wrong. They come out with patterns, they understand that, they really understand what has gone wrong. And keeping that view, they try to extrapolate that data into the future and try to predict the future very wrongly. And that's very disaster when it comes to investing. So then Morgan was very lucky to ask few questions to Daniel Kahneman. So he asked, so what can investors learn from this and how can people overcome this? So Daniel gave 2-3 ideas to Morgan. Basically, he asked, you all from investment world and finance world, investment community, meet up lot, so many people. So he asked, first people have to talk to as many as people as they can. Talk to different people. Talk first about your ideas to everyone. Bounce your ideas to everyone and see what is their opinion on that. Then second thing is talk to people who disagree with you. So that will be your ability to overcome your confirmation bias. Because what happens is when people have already made certain view about some idea, some company or on some person, they only look to the ideas which only confirm their already existing idea. So that is classic confirmation bias.
That's the worst thing any analyst can never do.
So if someone thinks that this company is bad, even though the company is going through a revival, they will not change their mind simply because they've already made their mind on this company.
So this is a very important thing that you come back to our Indian conditions. Most investors who invest their money, all are looking for confirmation bias from people who agree with them.
Exactly.
They are not able to understand what they are actually on, what the path that they have taken is on the right side from an academic point of the sense whether it's a good investment decision. Just because 4 people have bought it, they enter the same thing waiting for things to change and then they end up on a sorry state at many times.
So since we are in the world of information which is on overdrive every single day, so people tend to follow certain kind of people on Twitter or Facebook which only reconfirms what kind of opinions they already have, and they make an opinion based on the opinion already confirmed. So here Daniel Kahneman is telling to Morgan that please go ahead, talk to people who disagree, because these are the kind of guys who will make you overcome the confirmation bias. You fight for your idea in a right way. You argue in a very uncomfortable way, which brings out good and bad about your investment thesis. It shouldn't happen that you only speak to guys who agree with you. You go and speak to people who don't agree with you. So sometimes people tend to get very emotional when it comes to money, because money affects everyone in their personal life.
Yeah, so then here began simplifying things. So Morgan basically showed 2 pictures. So one was of Warren Buffett.
The god of investment.
Of investment, basically, yeah. So he was in his office, all smiles, Warren Buffett. So you probably will, you'll have to try and imagine this. So when you look at Warren Buffett's office, there's nothing great deal about it. He just has few things put out, photos of elders and stuff. And he had one big bucket which with a tagline called Too Hard. So what he does is he just reads stuff. Whichever he finds too hard, he just puts it in the bucket and chucks it out, because he wants to keep things very simple. So there's no Bloomberg terminals. No hi-fi things, not complicating things.
No Bloomberg terminal? No, sure
no. Yeah.
Not even a computer.
So just a side story, how Gokul is sure about it is because his principal CEO of the firm, Mr. Srinivasan, the head of Sri Sidwan Investment, attended the Berkshire Hathaway annual general meeting this year in 2018. So he was very privileged to see all this live in action.
Yeah. So that was an excellent thing. So the other picture which he showed was 2 desks of Lehman Brothers office. So that photo was just taken before Lehman Brothers went bankrupt in 2008. So there was one guy who was sitting with what, 8 screens eight terminals on front of him. So the poor guy next to him had only 3. So he didn't have an idea
so
what was happening around the world.
Must be a junior analyst or an intern.
Yeah.
An idiot.
So this was, he was trying to show how Warren Buffett is so brilliant and stuff, but he keeps things very simple. So he quoted another example wherein he was talking to one of his friends the previous night about an investment firm and what they were doing. So when he was talking to the person, he told that they had a team of PhD researchers who were there, and he asked them, what do they actually do? So then the guy answered, no, they don't do much here, but they are into marketing. So I find it difficult, why do you need PhD researchers to do marketing? So coming back to what Morgan was trying to show, that keeping things is very simple. So when you talk about Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway, there's a 30-year period where the average private equity fund did about 14% a year, and Berkshire Hathaway probably did 19% a year. So this is Berkshire's outperformance, something like 5% a year over the average private equity fund over this 30-year period. So I think probably he felt it was 1980 to 2010. So that was the period he was referring to. So now the interesting fact which we have to look at is there are tons of books, so probably some 2,200 books on Amazon devoted for Warren Buffett.
Yes.
Yeah. So
a lot of books have been written about
him. And it tears him apart in all sizes and shows what he has been doing. But actually, things, if you look at the average PE fund charges 2 and 20 as a fees structure, but Berkshire Hathaway actually charges no fees.
Yeah.
So if you actually see what is Buffett's salary, is $100,000 a year.
So, I mean, not a bad salary for a guy who's worth $70 billion and close, I
suppose. And you'll have to find that his firm earns that in 9.5 seconds. So that's Usain Bolt running 100 meters, huh?
Yeah, or the time Gokul took to say that.
Poor
man gets paid labor rewards.
Yeah. So over time equates that it's a 4% difference in performance. You shouldn't compare Berkshire Hathaway. So a lot of people will tell you can't compare Berkshire Hathaway with a private equity fund. They have different size, holding period and stuff. But then nobody has found in one place among the 2,200 books which has written who have pinpointed the difference of the fees, which actually maps up to the outperformance what Berkshire Hathaway has been doing. So basically what Morgan was trying to bring out is that keeping things simple is what actually matters. So you don't have to have enormous skill have to beat around the bush and do all fancy stuff. Just outperformance can be achieved by the fees itself. So you don't have to do anything. He's not playing down that Buffett is not talented or anything, or he's not putting him down. But this is a simple factor which people tend to ignore.
Yeah, so this is one of the most fascinating things I read. I mean, I've read quite a books on Buffett, but this was something first time I heard about the fees and comparing Buffett's returns to private equity. And the other fascinating things was group of PhDs working in a firm. Last time someone hired all PhDs, they bought down the world in 1997. Long-term capital. So yeah,
I think Morgan's favorite example to that.
So he quoted one more Nobel Prize winner from 1990.
Yes.
So any guesses, who's this?
Harry Markowitz.
Okay, so, Harry enters.
So who won the Nobel Prize for creating the capital asset pricing model? That's the model that shows you how much of your assets you should have versus stocks, versus bonds and other assets.
So basically portfolio choice, how does one have to construct the portfolio, efficient, diversification, correlation.
Exactly, but that came with a very mathematically, complicated formula, mm-hmm. which won him the Nobel Prize in economics.
So anything which is complicated, you're sure of winning Nobel Prize, I suppose.
Yeah.
If you don't know that formula, if you don't know Harry Markowitz, you won't get a job in the financial services industry.
So New York Times, you know, interviewed Harry Markowitz, you know, and they said, Mr. Markowitz, you have won the Nobel Prize for capital asset pricing model. How do you invest your own money? Markowitz said, I visualized my grief. If the stock market went way up, I wasn't in it. If it went way down and I was completely in it. So I split my contributions 50-50 between stocks and bonds.
I think that's completely.
And this is the guy who won the Nobel Prize for capital asset pricing model. And for his own money, he went.
So it is very intellectually stimulating to say formulas, quote, correlation coefficient and all. But when it comes to your own money, so like our classic My Guru quote, skin in the game, Nassim Nicholas Taleb, if you're not doing what you're preaching, then you have to take it with a pinch of salt when someone says something which they don't follow.
So people like, you know, exotic, complicated stuff when it comes to investing. But I think, you know, if you keep, you know, simple strategies like, you know, rupee cost averaging and invest, you know, diversified, you know, equity schemes, you know, over a longer period, it works.
Mausel was talking about his own investments. He said his investment pattern is something that allows him to sleep well at night and provides comfort to his wife and son. And I think that's beautiful.
So all Morgan is doing here is not targeting relative returns. It's all about outperforming in the sleep is what he's targeting here, which is sleeping peacefully at night rather than knowing what's happening in India in morning or late night US, what which market is open. So these were the things which were discussed in the in our session, wherein how investment has to be simple and what role does behavior plays in it, and how does different industries influence, and we can learn from them when it comes to investing. So there were a couple of questions were taken from the audience which Morgan answered. So our chief executive, assistant executive at COFP, will quote the person who asked a question. Then we will give out the answers what basically Morgan gave. So the other beautiful thing about Morgan was he was on the money. He didn't take much time to think. We just gave him the question. He just started in the flow. I mean, there was no flaw in the way how we took up the questions. He was taking the questions like how a kid,
as if he was in front of us and answering. It was so seamless that day, in spite of being miles apart.
Yeah, so Shani, what was the first question?
So first question was from Naveen Fernandes, our member.
Oh, uncle.
He asked about inflation is hardly a couple of centuries. You should show the changes and wide range of inflation over a century. How scared should a retired person be of inflation with central banks normally providing for real returns?
So uncle, what was Morgan?
He said number one thing that people ignore about inflation is the other side of the coin, which is that inflation leads to higher prices, which is someone's income, which also means higher wages and salaries, which leads to consumption, which leads to higher profits. So if you had invested in real assets over time, there is a great chance that you will keep up with inflation over time. The problem that people run into is that this will not be linear year on year, where inflation is greater than returns. But over a period of time, it will average out that your returns will beat inflation. In the US, people quote how the dollar has lost 98% of its purchasing power in 100 years. And that's true. It will impact you only if you hide this under the mattress for 100 years. That is, hide your cash under the mattress for 100 years. If you'd invested in the stock market, you would have made 200 times return over your dollar.
What he's basically said is dollar has lost its value, but if you are only in cash, if you had invested that amount, the purchasing power wouldn't have been lost.
You would have beaten inflation by a large, very, very wide margin.
From Jayant, and he asked,
yeah, that's
Morgan,
me.
Advice, how does one start writing actually?
So basically my question was, how does Morgan churn such beautiful blogs post after every single time he writes? And there's no law of diminishing marginal utility of economic doesn't kick in when he's writing. So like the other day, I and Jayesh were discussing like how Jayesh asked me, how does he write? So I said, Morgan has something known as NZT48. So that's basically a drug which he has endless supply, which he takes that and he starts writing. So for the people who don't know, you have to go watch Limitless movie in which Bradley Cooper takes that drugs and performs extraordinary work. So that was a side story of of limitless. Coming back to how does Morgan do? So his answer was, he's been doing this nonstop for 7 days a week for the last 13 years with 3,000 plus articles. That's equivalent to 40 books what he has written. So what he was trying to say is, when he started writing, he was not good at it. Like everyone else, when you start something new, you're not good at it. But once you start doing it very religiously, with having making time to write, start reading stuffs from outside world, from your non-industry thing, try to adopt that in your writing, keep writing. So that was one of the major theme of FP Pulse this year's magazine also, wherein we quoted Morgan, like how everyone has to write. We took inspiration from his blog, and I wrote the editorial, and we made sure that all people write. So we got around 26 people to write about it. So basically, it's all about bounce theory of Matthew Syed's book, wherein if one starts doing something new, it will not be that good at the beginning, but as he keep progresses, if he gets only better. Only thing is, you should not give up and keep doing what you're doing very religiously, which is Morgan is doing for the past 13 years, and that's how he churns beautiful articles.
This question was from our senior member, Mr. Lovai Navlaki. He just wanted to know how much Morgan spends time on reading and how much on working actually.
So Morgan gave a very nice gesture for this question. It's an easy answer. He said reading and working is the same thing for him. My job is to write something, and where do I get this? From reading. Wow. This is just a connection of both. That's what he was trying to say.
So basically, what he reads, he writes.
What he writes, he reads.
Okay.
Yeah. So next question was from Nisha. She wanted to know, would there be any another Warren Buffett ever made actually?
Well, Nisha, sorry to disappoint you. Warren Buffett is not made in manufacturing units. Yes, Bhati,
yeah,
what was his answer?
He was like, you know, not for under 70 years. And in fact, he was telling like, no, Buffett's analytical skills are in different levels. In fact, the opportunity what existed then is not there today. So to have one more Warren Buffett?
I mean, shooting a pie in the sky, I suppose, it's very difficult.
If a fund manager wanted to behave like Warren Buffett did, he wouldn't get the money. It's too simple for people to throw money at him.
So, next further, our member, Mr. Gopinath, who is the CEO of Manifest, asked Morgan that what is one behavioral trait which is most common among individuals and institutional investors?
I think for that question, Morgan had a very candid answer. He said what's common among all investors is short-termism, ability to measure your goals in decades, and attention span measured in days and months. So we get caught up with short-termism, and it's common among we humans. That's what he said. I think, you know, matured or successful investors come with humility, and they look for long term for the success in their investments.
And this Mr. Amit Mathur, who has come all the way from Mumbai to attend our retreat, asked Morgan, in his experience, what are investors most curious about, and out of the following three, like investing discipline, risk management, and returns?
What Morgan had to say on this is that the most important thing is cost of these returns. World is giving us this return, and what are you giving back? People should spend more time on this. Here, cost, basically, he meant emotional chaos.
So basically what Morgan is trying to say is people should be not worried about returns or risk and all. We should more think about more in philosophical way where this actual returns are coming from, what kind of companies are generating these returns. Are you comfortable in investing in these companies? This is what basically Morgan was trying to say.
Next question was from Mr. Gopinath again. He wanted to know, what is Morgan's personal investment philosophy? Is it passive or active?
Yes, did Morgan spill out the secret sauce of his investing, uncle?
He says that his personal net worth is a house, a checking account, a Vanguard total index, and Berkshire Hathaway, a few bonds. He believed in keeping it simple. Focus on behavior than picking stocks. Keeping his head straight in the next recession. He does not look at maximizing returns, but maximizing sleep at night.
And that's his goal.
Nice.
Next question was from Mr. Saurabh Bansal. He asked Morgan, if everybody follows the simple strategy, whether passive or active, etc., how will the market price the asset?
Morgan said that passive is only still small area of the overall market capitalization or the overall strategy. Basically, passive funds are price takers, they are not price makers, and it is still small portion. So if everyone is still doing passive or investing in ETF, still it's just a fear mongering that passive will take over the world and how it is un-American thing to do. But you should not be fearful, because it's still a small part of the overall picture.
So the next question was from our founder president, Mr. Srinivasan B. He wanted to know, is there any simple way to make money in short duration of time, say 10 years? In most of the examples, money was made over a long period of time.
Actually, Morgan had a very nice thing he said. He was very blunt. He said, market doesn't care about your goals, and market doesn't care when you need the money. Making yourself a slave of the market is a better option than you making the market your slave. And I think even from experience and seeing investors across the years, people who have followed the second line, that is, they have been the slave to the market, they've always ended up making more capital than they ever dreamt of themselves. If you start fitting these timelines, you know, this is the interesting thing that has come to the highlight, that if you fit in a timeline of 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, then it's better that you follow options like Morgan put it in a very simple sarcastic way, saying you should be in bonds and cash then. Okay, even though you might call it long term, but then you want everything to happen your way, it doesn't happen like that.
Next question was from Mr. Ramesh Hegde on selecting the strategies. He wanted to know Morgan's select strategy and how it impacts one's portfolio.
And Morgan was telling, like, you know, it's not about the decisions we make. You know, successful investment is about making good decisions. It's not making good decisions, but it is avoiding bad decisions. That's what make the strategy, his strategy actually. And he was telling, like, you know, he doesn't have any particular strategy, saying that, like, you know, he says that saving maximum, and I want to invest it for 30 or 40 years, and that's what will be taken care of.
So next question was again from Mr. Lovai. He asked Morgan that he used great examples like the nuclear power plant and war on cancer to link to the investor behavior. Which was the other third one of the story that he considered using?
In the U.S. terror attacks, he said the issue was going between travel by car or by planes. Driving actually increased auto death. Just because of a particular series of accidents during the U.S. terror attacks, people avoided flying. So if you link this to investment, we look at how people respond to volatility, buying and selling through market timing, which is simply the impact of certain events that have happened around them.
The next question was from Mr. Vinay Kumar. He wanted to know, what are the 5 books that shaped Morgan's investment policy?
Yeah, so the books he told was, the first one, The Science of Fear, How the Culture of Fear Manipulates Your Brain by Daniel Gardner.
So this book is all about how the fear in our culture and how that manifests into the things while we taking the decision. What was the next book?
The next one was The Big Change, America Transforms Itself, 19,000 to 1950 by Frederick Lewis Allen. The book was all about changes in the US economy and how America transformed during the period 1900 to 1950.
So this book is all about how industry-wise, how economy-wise, the U.S. was transformed. And remember, this was a period of Great Depression, how U.S. bounced back from the worst economic crisis, how they bounced back from the bombings of Second World War, and how U.S., every time they fell back, they came back very strongly. So this book covers the entire U.S. society and economy, what happened during this.
And the last one he had last read, which was Walt Disney. An American original by Bob Thoms. He explained, or the book is all about how Walt Disney was so passionate about his firm and how he built it. And everybody has to pick up something and take away from it. So that was the third book he quoted.
So these are the questions which we took up, and the Morgan answers, and the answers were so spontaneous in nature. He didn't even blink an eye before answering these questions. So what we have made is, we have made few points wherein each of one will give out learnings. So the first one will be taken up by Ravi.
I think, you know, it was a great, you know, session we had with the best investment author. And one of the learnings, key learnings, was in investment, you don't need best of education or background. Basic common sense and control of emotions and behavior is required for investment success.
Yeah, so the second learning we had, I think everybody most enjoyed Morgan's session. So one of the learnings or takeaways was investing's really the study of human behavior. And since it's the study of human behavior, it incorporates the lessons and rules from all kinds of different disciplines. So this was my takeaway.
And Morgan was so spontaneous, and the examples he had given were like, you know, very relatable to us. And my takeaway was like, risk is not necessarily analytical. When you are born, what culture you are into, these play important roles, and these are outside your control.
Another nice thing which Morgan said was, individual investors' willingness to bear risks depends on their personal history. Personal histories that are largely outside your control but influence how you can think about the world.
And this one is for people of all ages. He says, talk to as many people as you can, but mainly speak to people who disagree with you, which solves confirmation biases.
So here I think we have to...
One thing Morgan also mentioned, like, if you don't get cancer, you're not going to die from it. And that's a simple truth that we sometimes overlook, because it's not very stimulating and exciting.
I think the other important learning was, in the investing world, where there is just so much emphasis on what looks complicated versus what we know works, even if it's simple.
So this is not from his show, but actually I have taken it from his writing, since we was talking a lot of things about how his work involves around writing. So this is to quote from his article, like, why everyone should write. You know why? Because everyone is full of ideas, they're not aware of it. Write a journal, write a business manifest, write an investment plan. You don't have to publish it. It's a process that matters. You'll uncover so much you never knew that you think about it, but if you don't put pen to paper, you will never realize what you have in your mind. So please go ahead and write.
We're not done yet here. We have a couple of more guests who wants to share the feedback.
One of the most interesting sessions that I attended at the CFP annual retreat this year in 2018 was the session by Morgan Housel, who spoke on investor behavior. Normally, the face-to-face sessions is what I love and enjoy, and having somebody talk over Skype is sometimes dangerous, fraught with possibly downtime on connection, and not having enough clarity in terms of audio, and most importantly, sometimes not having lip sync. So he's saying something on the screen, but what we are hearing is something different. None of this happened. The most interesting thing that he spoke of, according to me, was the fact that while we think biases of different generations are because of a generation gap, he actually clarified that people behave in a big way based on what situations they went through when they were growing up. So if somebody grew up to the stock market scams, then as they sort of went ahead in life, they always felt that stock markets was a very risky, speculative investment. If people grew up with high inflation and therefore high interest rates, they tended to like fixed deposits, because fixed deposits, they have known to give high interest rates. The other interesting piece was his sort of conversation that he had with Daniel Kahneman, who spoke about a similar situation, that he was a pessimist because he grew up in a Nazi-occupied country where he lived, and therefore was looking at things from a negative standpoint. And his suggestion, which I found the icing on the cake, was that the only way that you can avoid your own biases coming into trying to understand investors as an advisor was to do three things. One is to talk to as many people as possible. Two was to talk to people who had differing viewpoints from yours so that you sort of opened up your mind. And the third was that you talk to people in different emotional states of mind, because people behave differently when their emotions were quite different. Really thoroughly enjoyed Morgan Housel, and I would love to have the opportunity of talking to him face to face sometime soon through COFP or otherwise in future.
That was Mr. Lavai Navalakki, founder CEO of International Money Matters Private Limited, based out of Bangalore.
I'm a member of COFP and was one of the lucky few to have attended the COFP retreat at WinFLA. Regarding the Morgan Housel session, I think it was a fantastic one, very different from the usual, in so much that he mentioned that some of the simplest and non-complex strategies are what have worked for investors over the world. That you know, costing and expenses in a fund do make a difference in the ultimate returns to the investor. So there were some very great learnings from Morgan. Very, very simple and straightforward, and great to hear him on Skype. Thank you for organizing it.
And that was Dilshad Dilimoria, founders, CEO of Dilzer Consultants. So I just wanted to, since we are at the fag end of the recording, I just wanted to thank a couple of people who made this thing happen. My first special shout out goes to Uday Dooth, who made it possible to get in touch with Morgan and making the connection and taking forward from there. We made the connection and we made the session happen. Couple of other people who were Shalini herself, who tirelessly went to bank to help us in transferring the money as the fees, which was so tireless and so cumbersome work. We also special thanks to Dilip from Sri Sidwin Investments, who helped us out with all the banking transaction and with filling the forms and all the things. Special shout out also goes to Team Economist, who are allowing us to host this in their podcast platform. So we'll be putting this up there. Then of course my man Satish for allowing us to record in his office. So thank you so much.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.